With all the gloom and doom surrounding the Rona, Lady Bunny's twisted humor makes her an essential worker. But then again, haven't we suffered enough?
Today, the deranged and demented Lady Bunny gives us a sneak peek into Cunt-tageous, her half-hour comedy special with guest star Christine. In what may be your last good laugh before the apocalypse, Bunny parodies songs by Lizzo, Justin Bieber, Madonna, and even Luis Fonsi and Daddy Yankee's Despacito.
Even RuPaul is not spared by Bunny's fracking show with her parody of Sissy That Walk called Sissy That Cough.
Listen as Bunny weighs in on all the people flipping their lids over wearing masks in public, her sex scene with RuPaul in Star Booty, and how she's keeping her wits about her during these difficult times.
Plus, enterprising drag queens in Canada are now selling custom drag shows performed safely in front of people's homes.
Corporate pride will not be stopped. Skittles loses the rainbow for pride, donating $1 to GLAAD for every bag sold.
And what is going on with the Cuban drag queen who set herself on fire? I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion, and this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible today because of fierce, fabulous people just like you. And by BetterHelp, help.com/fun. You know, right now, you're not going to be going to any therapist's office.
At least not face-to-face, so you might as well telemental health it.
Yeah, so you can visit a mental health professional at BetterHelp, help.com/fun, and you can talk about all the issues that are on your mind. And, you know, right now, you're going through a lot of stuff, and don't bottle up inside. Talk about it. Share your feelings. Grow as a person with a licensed mental health professional.
Visit BetterHelp.com/fun.
Throat is scratchy, can't get out of bed. Don't forget what CDC said. Out of work and credit card bills so high, can't pay my rent, landlord's outside. If I forget to use Lysol, I'll end up in the hospital. I'm climbing up my fucking walls, self-isolate. Bats fly, uh-oh, from Wuhan, chai, nuh-uh, fly, uh-oh, I don't wanna die. Now sissy that cough.
Hello? I wonder which friend is calling. Oh my God, it's someone who's ill. Oh, wait. This is even better. It's two friends and they're lovers and they're infecting each other.
Not just that. We're creating a super bug.
They, along with the Feast of Fools podcast, will die. This is a glorious day.
Yay.
Except it is rather ironic that you'll both perish on Memorial Day because no one will remember you.
Bunny, it's so good to hear your voice. My God, what is this world coming to? How is drag supposed to survive?
Well, like the atmosphere, it needed a reset.
Is that what's happening right now?
Oh, I don't know.
I love that photo of you promoting your upcoming show called Cunt-tageous, brought to you by Voss Events.
Yes!
Where you're lying on a pile of trash with a bat on your head. How was this photo taken?
It was actually a still from the video itself, which is like a downloadable, you know, comedy special. I can't see myself doing a Facebook Live thing that's an actual show because I grew up watching, you know, sitcoms that were shot on film and cinematic masterpieces, and I just can't sit and watch one close angle. Plus, honey, you ain't going to fit my wig in a very, you know, big, you know, wide angle lens for the wig.
You need some CinemaScope, right?
Well, who wants to look at 30? I don't want to look at my close-ups of myself for 30 minutes. So, you know.
Hey, Brandon, break out the wide angle lens.
Extra wide.
Exactly. And that's just for my face, not to mention my gut, my ever-growing gut.
Oh, if only IMAX was open.
Exactly. At any rate, yes, I'm glad that you like the photo. It is from a skit in Contagious.
So are you telling me that this perfectly appropriate photo for the coronavirus pandemic was actually a file photo? You're such a sick and twisted drag queen that you were ahead of your times.
No. I know. It's a still from the video.
But so where was this video shot? Like, did you go to a set?
I went to a studio that's near my home and, you know, just had one assistant who is also a neighbor, and Santiago Felipe, who has shot, you know, various videos for, you know, Sharon Needles, Bjork, etc. And it was our first time working together. So
that's a wide from the best to the worst. No.
To me. Yeah, his career is really on a downward trajectory.
It's a pandemic. What are you going to do? You take work where you can get it, right?
Right. And I mean, you know, the thing was fascinating for me because it's like, you know, my next job, well, I had a job in May and it was moved to October. But beyond the two live streams that I co-hosted with Bianca, I don't have any more work. I mean, they did, you know, pay me to appear in a Mary J. Blige, George Michael remix video, but that's not going to exactly happen on a regular basis. And so if you don't find a way to get your content online, then you're going to be broke. You're going to be one broke bitch, because I don't think that there are going to be packed audiences and dance floors even when they ease the restrictions. And one thing that I'm not sure that people are aware of is that once the restrictions are eased, people are still not going to have money. I mean, 80% of the country lives paycheck to paycheck, and now the paychecks have stopped for millions, tens of millions. Mm. So I think that figuring out a way to – and listen, the good thing about doing stuff online is that you can – you don't need to be in the same room with people, which is terrible in terms of not getting to workshop your material, not getting to feed off the audience's energy. That's, you know, like most performers' favorite part. The good part is that you don't even have to be in the same room, city, or country for, you know, a fan to check out your work. And the reason I liked Voss Events is rather than Stage It, is that Stage It, you have to do it live and see it when it airs. And I don't want to do live stuff. I want, you know, and I want people to be able to watch it after it's initially debuted in case they were busy that day.
Yeah, for us in our history of podcasting, I think there was a push to doing podcasts live back 10, 12 years ago. And we hated it because sometimes the guests would be running late or something would inevitably happen. And then the audience is just like sitting there waiting for, you know, and it doesn't make like you need a crew to make a live event feel seamless or keeps that entertainment going.
Well, and as much as my delusional self would love to dream that America is waiting, you know, with bated breath, the way they waited to see Roots or The Great Gatsby series on TV, you know, I guess I'm not quite as delusional as some may think.
Well, at least you're saving a lot of money on liposuction.
How?
Well, because they don't have to look at your body anymore.
No, they do. I mean, I picked this studio because, it, with my big moose ass, I can wear 6-inch heels and a 2-foot wig and still throw my hands over my ear. I just need something a little bit more expansive, or my eyes just get really, you know, tired of watching one angle. And I'm not, even of the ADHD generation, mm-hmm. though I may have a little.
You want it to be dynamic.
Well, I wanted it to be dynamic and fun to watch, and for different pieces in it to have different looks. And it was fun for me. I created a, I don't know the total length now, but I think it's over 30 minutes, comedy special. Now, I totally bypassed the gatekeepers who would normally have to greenlight a comedy special. No, I won't have the distribution that a comedy special on, network TV or even cable TV would, but my fans can still, access it if I get the word out on top-rated podcasts like yours.
I think it's exciting. I always loved your videos. You know, for a lot of our listeners, the way they know about Lady Bunny is through the show or through your videos on YouTube. And I think, it's great that there's a movement or pressure on a lot of entertainers to create permanent content to some degree, to making things that will outlive them. I've been thinking about this because there's this new Amazon Prime series called Upload that basically the premise is that when you die in the future, when you die, your consciousness will be uploaded to a computer and you'll live in some type of virtual reality. And if you can afford
another
it.
Reason to commit suicide. Oh, that's lovely.
And it's a dark, dark comedy that, sort of comments on the isolation that we're experiencing right now, not just because of the coronavirus pandemic, but because of the technology that we have.
Well, don't forget the mass stupidity of Americans.
Yeah. And so we're uploading content about ourselves. And so in some small sense, our consciousness is already living past us online in our videos and status updates and so on. And so just the same way that someone can watch you and Bianca Del Rio banter back and forth with each other for a million times, you're not personally aware of that. You're just, living your life. And same goes for the future. If we uploaded our consciousness to some server somewhere to live on beyond us, that really wouldn't be us. It would be a copy. It would be a content that we would be creating. In this case, our content is our consciousness.
Girl.
That's heavy. Okay.
It's a dark thing. And part of me is like, I think there's a lot of sadness and a lot of, we're starting to realize how important it is to be physically next to each other. I hope that...
Or inside of each other.
And I hope that just in the future, we're going to be able to value that a little bit more than we have in the past.
Well, listen, people are talking about, social distancing. We've already been socially distancing for years. My friends think it's very odd when I call them and will sometimes rudely ask, so what's up? Once I had to tell a project partner, babe, your mom died. I've known you for 30 years. That's what's up. I want to know that you're okay. I want to hear your voice talk to me, and I want to see if you're going to break into tears and you need for me to come over there or whatever. And so I called someone the other day because they put something on social media that was a little distressing and that I didn't want to comment on publicly. And this is someone who's reached out to me on personal stuff when they were extremely upset after having been attacked. And so I called them and they didn't answer. And then they texted back, "Did you call me?" And I'm like, this is complete social distancing. If I called you, right? Yeah. I wanted to what? Talk with you. And you are so ignorant on how to communicate, you return a phone call with a text. And you think that I'm literally going to sit there and text into a phone everything that I wanted to hear, know about based on this post. I mean, this is a breakdown in communications. We've already abandoned our safe spaces by hooking up on Grindr and whatnot. So we've been socially distanced. I mean, it's been odd to get phone calls for years. I mean, I will call a drag queen just to catch up and she will post that I, spoke to her on the phone as if
the phone call and all of the fun that we had chatting meant nothing unless she has posted it on social media. And this was long before the coronavirus.
Well, I'll say this, you know, you're an entertainer and an artist that's held in high esteem by many people, including your closest friends. And part of it is, as much as I enjoy talking to you, I don't want to bother you. You know, and
it's always a bother, right?
Well, and part of it is like, you know, when you reach out to us or to your friends, and this is something that you do a lot, is you just call nonsensically and start, you know, making weird voices or sounds. It's a real gift. It's a real delight, because in a lot of ways, we don't feel like we can do that with you because we hold you in such high esteem.
But if you hold me in high esteem and I'm trying to get in touch with you and I'm just babbling nonsense, which I do often do on many messages, so it doesn't seem like there's anything urgent to return my call. What the message is, yeah, is that I'm in a good mood. I like you. Let's bullshit.
What's your favorite babble to do to somebody on the phone for the listeners out there who will never get a phone call from Lady Bunny? What does that sound like to someone? Like, let's say you're going to call somebody.
I mean, you know, last night.
Oh boy,
a friend of mine has been going through a court battle because someone shot, you know, her lover, and so I mean, this was, you know, a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, and you know, she had posted that finally, you know, justice was reached in the courtroom. And so my message to her was that her lover who had been shot was back.
Oh. It took me a second to get that. I was like, no, but you've done things like, you go like, I love nuts. Squirrels are my friends and stuff like that. It's like,
but why wouldn't you want to return that call? That's the first call that I'd want to. Now, Miss Guy used to hate me, or not hate me, but hate it when I did this. I could call and by going, I could hit every note that would set off her phone and either listen to her messages or monitor what was going on through her answering machine in her room, including her apartment, including one time an argument. And I didn't exactly know how to do it, but she thought that I did. I could just go through every tone, mm-hmm, and by the time it had hit, I'd confuse the machine, it would finally just, like, you know, it was
much like your audience.
Were you a little kid? Right. Would you call up businesses and prank them and stuff?
Oh, of course I did. I mean, one redneck kid that I played with as a child, his mother would call the supermarket and say, "Do you have pig's feet?" And they'd say, "Yeah." And she'd say, "Well, don't wear sandals." So phone pranking has been a part of my, you know, life since day one.
So we finally understand that your entire act is just an extension of you calling people up as a kid and pranking them. That sounds like part of your material, you know?
Well, actually, in this Contagious, I had gotten 3 emails that were threatening me with blackmail, because they claimed that they had, you know, launched malware in my computer, which caught me which turned on my laptop's camera and recorded me masturbating when I visited porn sites. I don't visit porn sites, but it was a slightly similar password. I mean, you know, anyway, I got 3 of these. So I started one day, I may have been stoned, to reply to one with just sheer nonsense. And I never hit reply, but I came up with some stuff I thought was pretty funny and then sent it to my co-writer, Beryl Mendelbaum. And we made a skit for Contagious in which this scammer is not an email, but someone calling.
That sounds wonderful.
So, I mean, there's a couple skits in there.
Yeah, as part of it is that, like, during our times, you know, security and our privacy is even more urgent because we're on all these devices. And so all these hackers are, like, trying to take advantage of that and exploit that.
Right. And I mean, yeah, I mean, and, you know, I mean, it was asking me to send 2000 in Bitcoin. And, you know, I was like, I don't even know what Bitcoin is. I can't even get PayPal to work. You know, so I don't think you're going to get a Bitcoin payment from me. And then the hacker says, you know, if I release this video, will you ever be able to gaze in anyone's eyes again? And I say, with my eyesight, I'm lucky to gaze in their general direction. So it's kooky.
We'd like to take a little break now to remind folks that Feast of Fun is made possible because of fierce, fabulous people just like you. And today's podcast is also brought to you in part by BetterHelp.com/fun.
Is something preventing you from achieving your goals? What interferes with your happiness? Are you feeling stressed out or experiencing anxiety? Visit BetterHelp, HELP.com/fun, and assess your needs and match with your own licensed professional therapist that specializes in depression, relationships, and LGBTQ+ issues, and so much more. The service is available to people all around the world.
Here at Feast of Fun, Mark and I want you guys to have a more joyful life. As a listener, you get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/fun and join over 800,000 people taking charge of their mental health. Please, if you love the show and you're curious about getting mental health services, grow as a person, visit betterhelp.com/fun. Bunny, this sounds amazing, and this might be your best work. I've noticed you've been following your friends with Jackie Beat and Sherry Vine, not Sherry Pie.
That's right.
and you know, I think that during this crisis, actually, the dark, rotten, irreverent sense of humor of drag queens, especially people like you guys, is really extremely helpful in getting us through these tough times.
Oh, good, good. Enough. I couldn't figure out the Stage It thing, so I was going to watch someone's show, but no, I haven't been able to. I can't stand that they would dare to use a system of points to make you pay. You fucking do what everyone else does and say what the fucking amount is.
Yeah, isn't that weird? It's like you get 200, like 10 stars is a dollar or something. Like, it's so weird.
In Facebook, you can give people stars, but the part of it is...
A star is a penny on Facebook.
Is a penny. Right? And part of it is, like, it's the social media giant's way of tricking people into giving money to corporations instead of artists. Mm-hmm. And if you really want to do it, just PayPal the money or Venmo the money to them, you know?
But then you don't get access to that show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But isn't it a way for Stage It to develop their own language?
I guess.
So that you are,
yeah.
So that you become hooked on watching, so that you're more likely to watch shows on Stage It, which had the exact opposite of me, because I really was going to go and pay for someone's show, and I was just like, what the fuck is this? I hate this.
It's those little trinkets, you know, when I don't see it. I'm sure they still do it. You know, I play a game called Words with Friends, and they give you little badges, and, you know, remember when people wanted to become, like, the mayor of Foursquare or whatever it was?
Farmville.
You know,
Farmville.
All that stuff. So you get these little prizes, and it releases a little dopamine in your head, so you get these little micro rushes.
It's a way of getting you addicted into their economic system.
Well, I guess my brain is wired a different. I guess I like. I prefer a hit of Rush, okay, to a fucking imaginary bonus point.
You're old enough to remember the old poppers, right? Are they much different? Because they used to be like amyl nitrate, right? And you can't really get those anymore, right? Is it different? Or does it kind of still feel the same?
I think it's pretty much the same. Some kid handed me a gold bottle of designer poppers in Austin like a hipster. So I think maybe they're coming back. Maybe they never went away.
Would the poppers be good at preventing coronavirus infections or worse?
Well,
medical advice from Lady Bunny.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
what do you make of all these people like are suddenly viral experts on social media? And you see like all these really pushy, obnoxious people trying to go into like a hardware store or a grocery store without a face mask on. And they film themselves, you know, angrily fighting with employees and then posting on the social media to be laughed at and ridiculed.
Well, I don't know. Listen, the masks is a sore subject because they've given such different stories. At first it was you don't need one, then it was you need one, then it was you need the special N95, then it was, oh, don't use those. There's a shortage and the nurses and doctors can't even get them. Then it was you can make them at home. Then it was like, oh, you can, but you have to throw them away. Then it's like, no, you have to wash them. No, then, no, you have to put some a layer of pantyhose in there. And then it's, no, you don't really need to wear them unless you're close with other people. So listen, our ways of getting information are severely compromised. Mm-hmm. So I've even given up watching the news because, I'll read news, but I don't even understand where I don't even understand. I mean, how could they have so many different variations of what is, you know, going on with the masks? Today I was told by someone who does follow it more than I do that they're saying that it does not live for 3 weeks on metal or plastic surfaces. And when I heard that, I was like, don't viruses need some sort of, like, you know, moisture or skin or cells or something to be able to live? How could they live for 3 days or whatever they were saying on a metal surface? I mean, and now it turns out that that's not true. So I mean,
I think the 3 weeks thing, because they found remnants of the virus, not like the full virus intact. Because what you see when you see the virus, it's called a coronavirus, because when you look at it, it kind of looks like a crown and it has these little spikes, right? So all the spikes are tied together by this ring of fat. And so once the
just like Lady Bunny, everything is just like Lady Bunny.
So when you wash it with like soap and stuff like that, that fat gets dissolved, and so all those little spikes just kind of like they fall apart, and so the pieces of the virus might be there, but they can't do anything. You know what I mean?
I think it's sexy to see everybody wearing these masks out in public. And it's like, we went to the grocery store yesterday, and I swear to God, like, guys were cruising each other with a mask, and it's really safe because it's kind of like the modern burqa for everybody. The reason that, like, a lot of, like, if you talk to women who actually wore burqas, they said that they liked it because you could actually, like,
well, you don't know many people that wear people. It's
I know hajib. A few people. Yeah, yeah, hajib.
Yeah, not really a burqa.
Not the burqa, yeah. Right. So, but for our audience might not know the distinction, but the burqa is part of your face. The hijab is most of it. But for like people that I know who have worn them, they say that it's not as oppressive as you think it is. And it's similar to wearing that face mask in that we can see but not be seen. Like they can't see the expression on your face. They don't even know who you are.
Yeah. Well, it gives you more respect too for like the people that wear the headdress. And of course, now it's seen for as many people as very oppressive. But back in the day, you know, it was protection against the sun, against the dust. And Arab people were very clean people. And they may have been aware of the fact that, you know, if somebody coughs on you, you get sick.
Well, I don't think it has as much to do with that as it does forcing women to hide so that there's no sexuality exposed.
I'll disagree with you on that.
But I think it's sexy either way.
You think that women wear hijabs because of cleanliness and not to completely cover themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a little bit of the both. When you when you're living under hot sun and you go outside, and now maybe, of course, maybe the fairer skin is something that might be more desirable, so they don't want to get the sun on the face, that kind of thing. Yeah, and if you're out traveling and if you're going through the city, you leave, because you know they're not wearing that in their home, right? They're not wearing that around their family members. It's just, you know, when you go out to the market, you would cover yourself up, that kind of stuff. So
you would cover yourself,
and so this
you would cover yourself up in a boiling climate with heavy, like all-encompassing garments because you were afraid of germs.
Perhaps.
Well, part of it is that we want to create a space where people
I don't know
can,
the answer, but that sounds very implausible.
Some of these outfits are actually very comfortable, and some of them are not.
And if we reduce it to one
talking point, it doesn't show the nuance of what people do and why they do it.
So do you think that Orthodox or Hasidic Jewish women are you know, shaving off their hair and wearing wigs and getting fucked through a sheet? Are they doing that because of germs?
Well, what's your excuse?
Because they can't get hard unless I have a sheet over me or paper bag. But part
of it is, like, I think, you know, what we're talking about is a lot of different things, right? We're talking about the oppression of women through systemic types of clothing and costume. We're also talking about people's innate desire for comfort and safety and beauty. And, you know, there's people who argue against makeup and lipstick and eyeliner. They're saying that that's oppressive to women, too. You know, so, and part of it is, I think we want
to
just create
oppressive
a space.
It's not oppressive to women that look like men when they wake up.
You know, and I've taken to wearing like a little handkerchief around my neck when I'm out in the sun for a very long time because, you know, I know you guys think of me as ageless, but like part of the place where I'm seeing the age the most is a little bit on the neck, you know, and so I try and cover that up because I don't want the sun on it.
Well, we may see you as ageless, but we don't see you as AIDS-less. and a bandana's not going to help that.
I'd like to hear your commentary. I don't know if you've even seen this, but last week RuPaul taped the reunion special, and a lot of people on the internet are very conflicted, and that RuPaul wore a latex blue wrestling mask, a fetish mask, and a purple hoodie from American Apparel to greet all the drag queens that they came back for a reunion. And people are just like, what is wrong with RuPaul dressing up like this during, I mean, it just seems really weird. I don't know
what
if you caught it.
What is wrong with people that took so long to realize something is wrong with RuPaul?
And part of me, you know what? It's getting people talking about the show in a time where we're really distracted and there's a lot of content online. So in some ways, I think that is trying to get us to talk about it. We're certainly talking about it right now. And part of me is also seems like, you know, if one thing we can expect and the reason we like drag queens in general is that they're going to do things that you don't expect them to do. And act weird and do strange things.
I have no idea what went on, and I didn't see the episode or whatever, but I've seen the photos, and I would imagine, was he filming this in his fracking ranch in Wyoming or in L.A.?
I think it was L.A. because it looked like L.A. in the background, not the window.
Well, even if you're in L.A., you don't want to have makeup artists touching your eyes and lips and face, or even, you know, being close enough to you to do so.
But I know that RuPaul can put on, I mean, RuPaul would prefer to have some makeup artists and stylists put on their wigs and makeup, but I personally know, and you know, that RuPaul is capable of doing that, and certainly, you know, showing up Project Runway looking, and most of the times RuPaul doesn't wear makeup, wears a suit. You know,
but even when
things.
He's wearing a suit, he's wearing makeup.
A little bit of makeup.
Of course, you don't go on camera without some makeup. I wouldn't go on.
We don't either.
You know,
nobody does. Every single person that we're talking about, including ourselves, do not wears makeup while we're in front of a camera.
Mm-hmm.
Just to clarify.
Well,
that.
I mean, you know, if you wanted to, put this together with what Rue wore to the Met Ball, You could just say Rue has bad taste at times.
And so, so because, people have photoshopped.
Because it didn't look stylish. It. I mean, to wear something slightly bizarre like that, that is a mask. That, I mean, listen, I'll just tell, I know nothing about this. I didn't see it, but I've seen what people are saying online. And they are saying, why would you wear a mask that doesn't cover the areas, your mouth and nose, that the mask that we're supposed to be wearing are, you know, covering? Why would you wear a mask that exposes your, you know, nose and mouth? And so, yeah, I have no answer.
And then did you see the people like photoshopping the oil wells in outside RuPaul's window?
Well, reap what you reap what you drill. Oh, the shale of it all.
Oh, yes. Good.
Yeah, yeah. People are kind of like really obviously, you know, environmentalists, and people are concerned about fracking or have issues with it. Feel like it's a betrayal to some degree, but you know, in some sense, you know, a lot of. Big corporations and entertainers have financial ties to some not so wholesome sources, you know? And,
yes.
And part of it is like, you know, I'm glad that RuPaul's using some of her money to launch a empire that helps and supports drag queens to some degree.
Even though it's destroying the planet.
Well, you know, that's a more complicated thing. You know, it's like, what do we want? What kind of behavior would we like to see from RuPaul or other entertainers who have financial ties to really dubious or harmful sources?
Well, it's not just entertainers. A friend of mine in England who has investments, you know, tried going through her accountant, going green and only, you know, divesting from fossil fuels. And after she tried it for several months, she said she made no money. So, you know, we all, anyone that has investments may have stuff that's harming the world in our portfolio. And I would love to ask Rue about the fracking thing personally and hear so that I know what's going on. You know, someone sent me an article to prove that it was true, you know, because I think BuzzFeed did some investigation and that was reported also in The Guardian. I would like to actually hear it from Rue so that if it is true, I could say to Rue what I think a lot of people would like to say, that, you know, there are – you have plenty of – of things to invest in that don't destroy the planet more quickly. And, you know, please reconsider this. You know, I don't know the history of Drag Race, but someone has said that there has been a climate change ball as one of the challenges. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So this would be especially hypocritical because it would show that on the face of things, Rue or the producers want to appear concerned about climate change while they are fracking. However, once again, I have to relate this to a couple of things. There are a lot of people who have come down on Rue, even a Twitter person who I follow, whose name is now RuPaul is fracking or something like that.
Is that Bianca Del Rio?
You know, I think that a lot of people want to cancel RuPaul mainly because of their, I think, misguided views of him as a transphobe. So whether it is Sherry Pie or whether which the guy that wrote about this about Sherry in The Advocate claimed that that the finale shouldn't than Cherry Pie, that the whole season should be canceled. And mentioned Drew's, you know, problem. So these are people with trans. So these are people who are already, who already see Rue as the devil. And, they're right. No, I'm just kidding. And so this is another, you know, chink in Rue's armor with which they can attack him for what I think are misguided accusations about him being a transphobe because of who he decides to cast on a show called RuPaul's Drag Race. And if you are really concerned, here's the other thing I will want to bring up to these people that want to make a big deal about Ru's fracking. Who'd you vote for in 2016? Hillary Clinton? Fracking queen. Obama bragged. Do you like him? Obama bragged that now we export more oil than we import because of his emphasis on fracking. So if you are not going after frackers who are pushing fracking all over the country, and you're only going against someone who has one ranch in Wyoming, you're full of shit. And you just want to get at RuPaul. You don't give a shit about frackers. You actively support, vote for, and give money to people who peddle frackers.
I think why there's a lot of energy and anger directed to RuPaul from especially LGBTQ people is because we feel that RuPaul's closer to us and we have an ability to influence his decisions because we see him as a very influential person. And somebody like Obama or Hillary Clinton is very far away, and we don't feel like we have as much of a sway in how they think about the world. That, however, I do think, I agree with you 100%, that there is something in an undercurrent in us as people who have suffered, people who have not been heard and seen, that when we see one of our own become highly influential and economically successful or culturally visible, is that there's a part of us, all of us, we share that there's this jealousy and this anger that we want to bring them down. And I think RuPaul is more scrutinized than anyone else is in terms of that. And, you know, it's possible to be right and also to be highly scrutinized.
I am against fracking, and I'm against. We need to move away from fossil fuels, or we're not going to meet that 11-year deadline, or is it 10 now? Yeah. At which we do irreparable damage. So I do not say that. I do not criticize Rue if he is fracking because I want to bring someone down.
Yeah.
If he is doing that, he is doing something that is terrible.
Yeah, and it's possible to be both, right? It is possible for RuPaul to be doing something terrible. However, he's also held and scrutinized to a higher standard because he's an LGBTQ person who is so successful.
No, he's an LGBT person who is successful and who is fracking.
Yes. Aren't we agreeing on the same thing? You just said like part of it is that people are trying to tear RuPaul down and they don't care whether he's fracking or not. They're just looking for something to do. And at the same time, fracking is a terrible thing to do and should be discontinued.
But like you said, like Hillary Clinton would not like people like they'll happy vote for her, praise her and everything like that. And, you know, OK, well, she's a politician, so fracking's OK.
Or Obama.
Yeah. Tiger King is a very popular show on television and everybody's like wrapped up in the characters and the phenomena of these private zoos. But initially, Tiger King was started because as a way to draw attention to the pain and suffering of these of tigers and the fact that they're an endangered species and that they're being kept in private zoos. And at the end result of all this, whether it's we're talking about fracking or we're talking about the exploitation of tigers for entertainment and for money, we're not really alleviating the problem here. We're just creating content. We're just masticating and fighting amongst each other. Meanwhile, these tigers suffer. The environment suffers.
Well, I do not want tigers to suffer unnecessarily in zoos because when they suffer, they are so much less tasty.
Did you see that Skittles is bringing back their blank they're losing the rainbow. The candy maker Skittles is losing the rainbow for Pride and donating a portion of the proceeds to GLAAD. And that, I think that speaks volumes of like what GLAAD does and this whole idea of marketing to LGBTQ people at Pride.
You mean they're not going to make rainbow Skittles?
So no, they're releasing a white Skittles saying that they're pausing the rainbow or getting rid of the rainbow for Pride to remind people of the value of the rainbow.
That doesn't make any sense to me. And it sounds like I should really go into advertising or marketing because I could come up with a hell of a lot better idea than that.
It was really successful like a couple of years ago. And so they're actually recycling this ad campaign and this product that they did.
When Foster brought it up to me, I'm like, are you sure this isn't old news? This sounds like old news. I think we've been here before.
Yeah, I think that the color of candies is the least of gay people's problems.
Well, and drag queens in Calgary, in Canada, are doing shows in front of people's home. Higher Heels YYC is basically like a singing telegram. You can pay a group of drag queens to show up at your home or a neighbor you don't like. It's home, and they'll do a full show. They'll be lip syncing to Celine Dion, because that's what Canadian drag queens do, right?
Oh, I'd like to hire them to do a 24-hour concert outside Bianca's home.
Sherry Pie might be available for work.
Well, you know, having worked on the New York club scene for decades, I've always known that Sherry was a pervert. Oh, wait, it's Sherry Pie. I thought you meant Sherry Vine.
Did you know Sherry Pie, though?
No, I did not.
Or Allison Mosse?
No.
You got a phone call by somebody who was trying to convince you to gain weight for a musical called Bulk. And it looks like you succeeded.
I gained the weight without even taking the call.
Yeah, haven't we all? Jeez.
Yes. Oh my.
I was talking to somebody the other day, and because they were so impressed with Leslie Jordan, he's become like an Instagram star during this quarantine. And I mentioned to them that you actually knew him way back in Chattanooga when you were a young little queen.
Yes, I was a busboy to his waiter.
Oh, so he was bossing you around?
Not much, but yes.
Like, Bunny, will you go pick up those plates on table five?
What was that like? What kind of what was the setup like for that?
It was kind of like a preppy restaurant near the campus of University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, where my father taught. And Leslie is a joy. And back then, he did the craziest thing, but it worked. His eyes always looked so gorgeous. And of course, I mean, this is, 40 years ago. And I said, what is making your eyes pop out like that? So do you know those red pencils that teachers mark paper with or used to? Mm-hmm. And you kind of unwrap them instead of sharpen them?
Yeah.
He would line the rim underneath his eye with that. And for some reason, instead of making him look sick or jaundiced, it would really make the blue in his eye pop out and just give it like this. I just couldn't take my eyes off of his eye. So I was like, oh, that's a crafty queen.
What do you think is why people so enamored and enraptured with his videos are just, short little stories of him talking about his adventures in show business and in life as his, a squeaky queer man from Chattanooga, Tennessee?
If I knew that, then I would be on par over this. No, I actually recognize, I haven't seen but about three, and I do recognize them from his very funny one-man shows. Mm. I worked with him on a cruise. I guess it was in September, and he had the most genius entrance because the whole, main area of the stage sunk down. And so they introduced him, you heard the opening music, and then you saw him, rise up
you know, but then it stopped short of where, you know, he was, you only were seeing like his head and shoulders because he's so short and he had to like climb out of it. And it was an absolutely brilliant, I think I put it on my Instagram. It was, I don't like to give away people's, you know, tricks, but this one was absolutely genius.
Mark, have you are familiar with, I'm sorry, do you have something to say?
No, it's fine.
What is going on with Cumgate? I see this everywhere. And I'm like, I'm trying to wrap my head around
it. It's very disappointing, this
Cumgate. Hashtag Cumgate.
Have you seen this Cumgate, Lady Bunny?
No.
It's a hashtag that's coming out of the UK. And I was like, Cumgate, let me see what this is all about. Hashtag Cumgate. I guess there's a guy, his name is Dominic Cummings, and he works with Boris over there. And for he took his kid on a trip to the English countryside, and he was like making excuses, like he had to get his vision checked, he had to do these other things. Well, they're at a stay-at-home order, and so people are like taking him to task for basically violating that. And so people want them to dump the cum. Cummings, and so
cum dumpsters.
So now it's Cumgate is everywhere.
No, I haven't heard about that. Mm.
I like it though that the press is like using all this slang terminology that just like 5 years ago would have been scandalous to use. You know?
Yeah, they would have never said it, but it's cum like dumpsters. Yeah, they're all reporting on it.
Lady Bunny is triggered.
Well, you know, so I do believe that. You know, there are people who don't believe in the existence of the coronavirus or that it's that big of a deal. You know, I do believe that there are people who are just maybe not, who don't care or who think they are impervious to illnesses, you know, running around and doing whatever they want. But I'm seeing things online, like, you know, there was that, I believe they were from the Midwest, Michigan, claiming, you know, I need to go get my hair done. You know, that was her excuse for wanting to, you know, and there were a bunch of people with her. And then there was a video on Twitter that I saw yesterday where a guy was wearing a mask. And he was in like a nice dress shirt and trim and handsome. And then there were a bunch of like kind of sloppier looking, you know, actually it was mainly women yelling at him saying, take it off, take it off.
Oh, he was a reporter.
Right. So I don't know, you know, exactly, you know, what is happening with that. But I wonder, since I'm very distrustful of the media, of the left and the right, if they're not, I mean, yes, these things are happening, but I'm wondering if they're being amplified, because we do need to realize that the Tea Party Republicans' protests against Obamacare, i.e. slightly cheaper insurance, were pushed by the Koch brothers, who made grassroots-looking websites to trick these people into going out and protesting against cheaper insurance or socialism, mm-hmm. or whatever they called it. So I'm wondering if the media is not making more of this than I mean, because I'm not saying that these things aren't happening and that these people aren't doing this, but if you show them on a loop, then you have a dimmer view, mm-hmm. of a certain kind of person. And we've actually managed to politicize a pandemic. And I don't think that, I think that there are, you know, questions about what both sides are saying. Obviously, Trump disbanded the agency, which would have dealt with this. And had a slow response. Democrats Mayor de Blasio and Governor Andrew Cuomo also had a slow response, which is why New York City is one of the biggest, the hardest hit areas in the country. So while Trump wanted to make, you know, the least of the coronavirus at first, until he was forced to admit that it wasn't just the flu, and that's why it was filling up hospitals all over the world. You know, it's now clear what he wanted to do. He, or somewhat clear, there's a few reasons. He wanted to make it look as if this were not a big deal, so that he hadn't screwed up as badly. If he just screwed up with something that was only as bad as a flu, it wasn't as big of a screw up. He also wants to get people back to work, because Republicans and Democrats too, they just don't admit to it as easily, are business parties with corporate interests backing them. And of course, Trump wants the church to, you know, get back in session, because these are his followers, and that's throwing them a bone, because people, fundamentalists, believe that God sent this virus, God will protect them from this virus if they are prayed up, and that even if they get the virus and die from it, that's what God intended. So Trump is able to hit several marks at one time with his actions. And at the same time, I heard a speech from de Blasio probably a month ago, maybe a month and a half ago, where he quoted CDC figures saying that 80% of the people who get the coronavirus do not even need to see a doctor, take any medicine, or be hospitalized, and will not die. So now 20% dying and going into the hospital, you know, whether they recover or not, it's still one-fifth. That is no picnic. Mm. But for someone like me, I was walking around. I mean, I'd just come back from a tour of UK, and before that, a tour of the whole U.S. So I was concerned, you know, that I living in New York, that I would easily get it and that I was definitely going to die. But then when I just occasionally hear from de Blasio, and then once from my Democratic Assembly member, Deborah Glick, that 80% of the people won't die, well, that completely changed my mood, because, you know, it's not as bad as 100%. Or 80% are going to die. It's 80% are going to get over it without needing to see a doctor. So I think the left has, I think that they have kept that info out of the headlines, because they want to score points and win against Trump based on his, you know, bad handling of the pandemic, and show that he's not fit to lead. I think they had plenty other reasons to show policy-wise why he and other Republicans are not fit to lead and don't match the vision of Democrats. But the sad thing is, Democrats are actively shunning their own base and trying to, you know, find politicians like Joe Biden, and if he truly is picking Amy Klobuchar as a VP, they're trying to pick politicians to appeal to moderate, never Trump Republicans, which means that we have two parties of the right.
Mm. In terms of the number of people that live in the United States in ratio to the deaths, and you compare that to South Korea, for example, who knew about the coronavirus pandemic at the same time, in the same week as the United States did, our reaction to it shows how woefully unprepared we are to face these things. And certainly, like the Democratic Party, in trying to, you know, cancel the New York primaries, that thanks to Andrew Yang, of all people, who basically threatened to sue the DNC for trying to cancel the New York primaries, and they had to bring the primaries back. There definitely is a concentrated effort to trying to make the Democratic Party more conservative. And certainly, like, at the same time, the rumors of Amy Klobuchar being considered as a vice presidential running mate is, in my opinion, misinformation, because there's not been any statement made by.
They're all being vetted.
They're all being considered here. Yeah. And so part of that is it's like, you know, Elizabeth Warren also is being considered as well. But you don't see rumors of that or articles of that because it's not divisive. It's not alarming, you know. But the idea of Amy Klobuchar becoming vice president or being chosen as vice president, I think would be extremely pointless since she has the same appeal as Joe Biden.
Well, but she's also kind of unlikable.
And very unlikable. You know, she turns around to Pete Buttigieg and is like, do I look stupid? Do you think I'm stupid?
Yeah. Some people see her as a straight talker, which is valued in the Midwest. And they also see, except for you guys, they see her as kind of no nonsense. And you know what? I don't agree with her policies, but she is a communicator.
The fact that we're having a discussion on Amy Klobuchar as a vice presidential candidate is because it's seen as something divisive, and it's an attempt, regardless who you're blaming it on, to dissuade voters from being excited about voting Democrat in the next election. Part of it is, you know, there's a lot of progressives running still, and the president is, you know, definitely an important, this race is probably the most important race of our lifetimes. And regardless of how you feel about Joe Biden, it's definitely an urgent matter to get rid of President Trump.
Well, first of all, I think it is quite absurd to think that the right VP is going to somehow fix Joe Biden. And if this is the most important election in our lifetime, then what the hell are we doing with Joe Biden? Mm-hmm. He often appears senile. He has 9 allegations of either sexual assault or you know, inappropriate touching, hair sniffing, you know, or whatever. And he's also a serial liar. When he made that comment about if you vote for Trump, you ain't black. When he apologized, he came out and said that the NAACP has endorsed him every time he's run. The NAACP just issued a statement saying, no, we don't endorse. He does not know what is going on. Even in his attempt to apologize for a statement that many feel was nuts, and proving that he takes black voters for granted. He lies in the apology.
It's certainly obvious more than ever that not only Democrats are compromised in that regard, and that there's even like politicians that were running just to keep progressive candidates from getting a leg up.
Of course there were.
And it was really clear to me when all the moderate or conservative Democratic presidential candidates collectively quit, you know, gave up on the race to push Joe Biden, who wasn't doing too well.
Thanks to Obama, who would hate to have his own poor legacy, one up by someone like Bernie Sanders, who actually would deliver hope and change.
Mm.
What's a solution there? Is there a solution? Is that why part of the frustration is that there's not a clear path into this presidential election?
I swore that I was never going to make a video where it was just like strictly political.
Yeah.
You know, I made, gag parody videos about Trump, Sarah Palin, you know, whatever. There's something in my duet with Christine in Contagious, which has one political verse. But I'm not going to actively campaign against Joe Biden because I would rather he win than Trump. I know that the left will go to sleep again the way that they went to sleep under Obama, who is on video saying that he governed like a moderate Republican. As I say, we've got one party and it is corporations. This is why they don't care that it's a senile guy against a crazy one. This is what I mean. Do you think these parties aren't aware of the trillions of dollars that they?
Well, it's pretty clear that there's certainly huge issues here, and certainly you know the fact that Jeff Bezos at the end of this pandemic is on track to becoming the world's first trillionaire is extremely disturbing. Well, and you have progressive news sources and people praising Jeff Bezos for becoming a trillionaire. And I'm like, you're taking that money. Should never exist a billionaire, much less a trillionaire.
He owns the neoliberal mouthpiece, Washington Post, which is perhaps the biggest next to the New York Times, the biggest neoliberal mouthpiece, political mouthpiece. And he also pays no taxes on Amazon, which is just, listen, people have just got to realize, I don't care if you think Obama's kids are cute or his wife is stylish or whether you like the Bush family or whether, you know, you think Melania is pretty or, you know, whatever. These people take meetings and sit and discuss with business leaders how they can rip you off, how they can make sure that they don't regulate the banks so that they can keep pushing payday loans so that you lose your homes. This is what these people do. So, my dad's a history professor. But you don't need to be a history professor to know this story. Boston Tea Party, what did they do? They threw the tea in the harbor to protest the fact that there should be no taxation without representation. What happened with trillions of dollars from the Federal Reserve when they bailed out Wall Street? It ticked back up for 20 minutes, trillions that they threw at people who can afford to play with their money. And now they've got people waiting on, $1,200 checks and posting on social media. When is it coming in? No, but here's what I don't understand. So people are outraged about people who go outside not wearing masks. Let me ask you about the outrage of this. Babe, Your paychecks stopped coming. Your bills did not. The government is telling you that you cannot go, telling me and telling many others that we cannot go to our jobs. So they need to pay us. And I don't give a shit if they nix the $25 million that idiotic Pelosi put in the one of those budgets for the Kennedy Center. And guess who they hired? John Voight. who I last saw reciting a poem in a Britney about soldiers in a Britney Spears concert. That's who we're spending $25 million on. Think how much protective gear that could go for. So listen, we're sitting here instead of saying, oh, y'all should be wearing a mask, why aren't we up in arms saying 1,200? Are you kidding? This is what I need. And are we listening to the politicians that are saying, we need 2,000 per month? Because that 1,200 is already spent before it arrives. And this is a dire situation, and we're getting mad about people not wearing masks. The government works for us. And do people even know who the three that were proposing the $2,000 a month are? Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, and Ed Markey. Now, the fact that Kamala Harris supported it means that it never had any hope of passing because they're in the Senate, and it is a GOP-controlled Senate, which is never going to agree to that. But who's making demands on them? Who even knows who their representatives are to call them and say, motherfucker, I need $2,500 a month. You telling me that I can't go to work. I don't want to spread the disease or catch it. I want to do what you've said that I need to do.
So you need to pay me. And what does that mean? Do we cancel Trump's idiotic space program that Nancy Pelosi also paid for? She also gave him more money for defense than the Pentagon even asked for. Let's take it to the American people, MSNBC. You'll never see this segment on there. Hey, nurses and doctors don't even have enough tests. They don't even have enough protective gears for themselves. Could we close down the military base in Guam? How many millions would that save? How about the one over in Eastern Europe? How about the one that, why don't we just get out of Iraq that we should have never have gone, you know, into in the first place? And if stuff erupts there, well, you know what? You can talk about we don't cut and run. We shouldn't have cut in the first place. And we are now in a crisis. So I don't even see any hope for this country because they are too concerned about who's wearing a goddamn mask, more concerned than with that than with their own bills. Because I don't know what other people are going to do when they can't afford to pay their bills. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to somehow get back to Chattanooga, Tennessee and live with my parents and give up performing. Or I'm going to live in a shelter. And I don't know how my situation could be that much different from other people's.
But is that a threat or a promise?
Well, you'll have to see Contagious to find out.
And where does one see Contagious? Where do we go for that?
It debuts June 5th at 8 p.m. And it is the tickets are at VossEvents.com, V-O-S-S, events.com. And, you know, like I say, it's not very political because I save that for you. And because, you know, people really need to laugh, you know, right now. But at the same time, I'm looking around, you know, I mean, young queens are calling me and saying, I'm bored. You know, when is this going to be over? And I'm like, honey, do you know what's happening here? Yeah. Do you want to Google the Great Depression?
Certainly, we have a lot of things to overcome, you know, and I appreciate you being a force for good in this difficult, twisted world. And I wonder, you know, how are you able to stay mentally afloat and keep going when there's just so many things to be depressed about? You know, there's this one article that I was reading in the Washington Post saying that for a lot of people, the COVID-19 pandemic and the quarantine has destroyed their sexual libido, that they're experiencing a lot of setbacks and depression and withdrawals because it's hard to communicate even. You're with somebody who you're living with somebody and you're not getting along with each other. You don't want to have sex at all because you're anxious or worried about catching coronavirus. And, you know, Americans are going through a depression of some kind, whether it's economic or mental. How are you staying afloat? How are you keeping your wits sharp about you?
Well, just back a little bit to what you said before, I have a friend I spoke to in London who is a drug and alcohol abuse counselor, and he said all of that is through the roof. And, you know, I think that we should, you know, I really didn't intend to be Debbie Downer, but sometimes I feel like some people are, you know, and I imagine these are people with a, you know, financial cushion or who can work from home. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with making the best of it and doing those online yoga classes or learning to knit or, you know, whatever things you didn't really have time to do. But to say that to someone who was the majority of people who were, you know, paycheck to paycheck, and now there is no paycheck. I mean, I don't understand how, you know, they can be expected to have the clarity of mind to embark on some new craft project. I mean, you know, because there's going to be a lot of sitting around and waiting. And, you know, one thing I realized as soon as this, you know, started happening is that, oh my God, this is going to make a lot of bad situations in people's lives worse.
So as my friend confirmed with the alcohol and drug abuse cases way, way up in England anyway, and they were already quite high there. this is something that's going to be worsened by the coronavirus. If you weren't getting along with your spouse, this will be worse. If your kids are driving you crazy, this will be worse. If you were struggling to make ends meet, this will be worse. If you didn't know how to you'd afford your school or how to start a new business, this will be much, much, much more difficult. So it is such a dire situation, that I don't know how to steel my nerves for it. You know, I will say that doing this, video project was fun for me because I could throw myself into it. And for a few weeks, I was waiting on a wig to be mailed or lyrics to be written or, stuff like that. But the second that I turned the footage over to the editors, I fell into a 5-day severe depression. I mean, I was practically, bedridden. I mean, because doing the project, it was like postpartum depression. It made, doing the project, I was so busy for weeks, putting it all together. And then once you've shot it, everything you need to do is just, in the hands of the editors and the people who were, publicizing it. So, and now I'm getting back into the interviews, but yes, I was extremely depressed. I mean, one reason I like traveling for work is that, my apartment is no show palace. It's like, I don't love being here. And I really feel for the younger people who are, hornier than, I am. I'm 57. That sex isn't the first thing on my mind, but you've got to, someone posted a picture, a friend of mine posted a picture of four kids sitting in a circle.
Aww.
And they didn't have masks on. They were in the park. And he said something like, assholes. And I'm like, you don't know them. I mean, they could already live under the same roof and be, brothers and sisters and already have everything. And they're going to put their masks on when they get up and walk home. I guess it comes from fear, but I don't understand why people are scolding other people. And, no one knows how this is going to end up. No one knows how the when we can work again. No one knows what we're going to do about bills. No one knows about the second wave. No one knows about the antibodies test or any of that. So I get it. We're unnerved. I mean, I'm not a control freak. If I were and had zero, control over any of this, I would be absolutely losing my mind. But I also do feel for, kids who were having to, when I say kids, I mean young adults, having to fight their natural impulses to go out, wear more revealing clothes in the sunshine, get exercise, and yes, spark each other for sexual contacts. I mean, this is how, life goes on.
Bunny, it's so good to hear your voice. And I got to say, at the end of all this, the most important thing is our relationships to each other. And I always tell people, it's like, if you're feeling like you're struggling, reach out to somebody, talk to somebody today. If you're isolated and alone, I'm sure Lady Bunny will take your calls.
And I will respond to your suicide attempts with, hey, I heard you like nuts. Do you like squirrels?
Squirrels are my friend.
You could make a lot of money just by calling somebody for like 20 minutes and being on the phone and just talking about shooting the breeze about anything, and part of it is like, we have such a powerful ability to do good just by connecting with each other. Call somebody you haven't talked to in a long time. So that friend of yours.
I do that all the time. I mean, I've even gotten in touch with, relatives down south who I haven't, even seen in, like 5-10 years.
And once you talk to them, you remember the reason why you haven't talked to them in 5 to 10 years.
Well, they're mostly sweet people. Actually, I love to hear what Republicans have to say. I'm always fascinated to hear what other people have to say from the other side, because
we get so much of our own side, even, you know, with the Facebook algorithms, you know, based on we see more of what we like. But there's a friend of mine who often posts stuff like this, and he's a good guy, and I'm sure that he's frustrated, but I wish I could get through to him. I know that I never will. He posts, if you didn't mind Trump's racism, if you didn't mind Trump's lies, surely you disapprove of the way he's handling the coronavirus. And I typed a response and I didn't even hit send, because the answer is, listen, Republicans are not demons. They do not support gay rights. They do not support the abortion rights that women on the left think that they should have. They are not demons. And they have reasons for thinking the way that they do. I used to think I knew everything about guns until we started having these discussions. And I realized it's easy for me to say, never having owned a gun or never having needed one. But if I lived in North Dakota and the nearest home was a mile away, if someone broke in, well, then yeah, if I didn't have a gun, they were going to steal every single thing and rob and kill everyone there. You know, the nearest police force may be 20 miles away. And so a lot of Republicans, look, they're not mentally ill. They know that Trump is a joke, and they don't necessarily like him. They hate the political establishment in both parties, which is why he was able to ace all of those career politicians like Jeb Bush. Didn't he ace like 15 of them?
Yes,
you know, Marco Rubio and all those. It's not that they think that that he's going to build a wall. They didn't believe that he was going to make Mexico pay for it. They know that he lies. They support him because they hate Democrats. And Democrats' hypocrisy has been on full throttle for since 2016, when Democrats wasted 3 years on peddling Russiagate theories, which are falling apart left and right. And so then they spent a year on impeachment. And so when Trump calls them the do-nothing Democrats, well, they didn't get the collusion charges with Russiagate. So they do look like the do-nothing Democrats. I mean, this is, we've got to look at how they look at people. You know that part of my whole thing, you know, with doing a show called Trans Jester is to say that, you know, you can support trans people's rights without hating the 99% of people who are cisgendered, because your movement is never going to go anywhere. And so who tends to vote for Republicans? Men. What has the left done for years? Demonized men. And now, after this thing with Joe Biden and Tara Reid accusing him of slipping three fingers in her vagina, suddenly the Democrats don't want to listen to women. They want to smear women.
But aren't we supposed to avoid men? That's mouth, eyes, and nose. Instead, follow women. Wash your hands, obey social distancing, mask up, exercise and eat well, and end no unnecessary traveling. That was a public health poster the other day.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, but listen.
Yeah.
A random trans performer,
yeah,
friend posted something about how she'd seen someone on the train in DC, a black guy who told her, "I don't like wearing masks. That's feminine." And then I saw something similar on Twitter.
Yeah.
And then I read an article in the New York Post encapsulating all of that, saying that you know, whatever it is about men that both fascinate me and make me scratch my head and sometimes repel me, some of them will walk around and in a thump my chest mode, I'm impervious to any fucking coronavirus. So, you know, this...
and it gets you horny.
No, it makes me want to put a mask with a hole on it on my asshole.
Just use a condom because the coronavirus is in the cum.
That's right.
Bunny, before we go, there's a drag queen on your Facebook page that is literally on fire. Like her part of, she's
in
wearing
Cuba.
This. In Cuba. Do we know who this person is?
How does she do that act?
I used to get into trouble with the managers and owners of clubs when I used to try to eat fire in my drag act. But this drag queen, literally the top of her wig and this shoulder piece is lit up. She could set off the fire alarms, but she manages not to. And for a good half of her act, she's like full on flames.
Well, I mean, there are people who train for that. And most clubs, if you even use like a, you know, lighter or sometimes a cigarette on a Broadway stage, you need to have like a fire expert there, because should the place catch on flame and you go up in flames, yeah. You need an expert, you know, on hand. So
I don't think there's any fire expert nearby. I think she's just throwing caution to the wind.
Well, I mean, I don't, know.
Who knows what's going on down there? I mean, anything could go with the yeah. establishment.
I don't know about her, honey, but I don't care. They're not interested to me if they got on a wig and high heels. But honey, the men in Cuba will set me on fire.
I think it was Heclina.
And said, if you want to call the fire marshal, then we'll probably have a three-way, okay?
I think it was Heclina was telling us about a queen in San Francisco who decided she was going to cook a Jiffy Pop popcorn on top of her head. And so she got like a little Sterno burner, had that on top of her wig, and then she had the Jiffy Pop. You know, it comes in that self-enclosed pan. I don't even think they sell those anymore, do they?
At
the grocery store. And yeah. So she was going to pop the popcorn on her head, and like it just got too hot, and then she ended up getting burns on the top of her head. I mean, the popcorn did pop, but...
Yeah. And then she had to go to the hospital or something for it.
Don't play with fire, kids. Don't play with fire.
Yes. The only flames...
I used to think... Mm-hmm. That's funny, because I used to think that those Jiffy Pop things, once popped, looked like the most magnificent Middle Eastern disco turban.
You could wear it and protect you from the coronavirus.
The only flames you need, honey, is in your fierce homo and transsexuality, darling.
And I look forward to seeing your comedy special, Cuntagious.
Emphasis on the cunt.
Oh, before we go, let me ask, because we did talk to Mike Ruiz last week, and we
about
talked
about your sex scene, yeah,
about
with
your
RuPaul.
Sex scene and RuPaul and Star Booty, and we probably talked to you about it before, but I don't even know if I have a question or if just what was that experience? what was that experience like?
Well, did RuPaul like go up to you and say, "Hey, I want to film a sex scene with you in this movie we're going to do. I'm going to eat your pussy out."
There was a script which yes, part of the punishment I having sex with me is punishment. I was a villainess and I was forcing Rue to eat me out, I think.
Eat at the Y, yes.
And your pussy was covered in crabs, and one of them got into her mouth, and she had to spit it out.
Oh, yeah, and there was a little plastic crab.
I hope you like seafood.
I believe that was my... I added that beef curtains line, and yes. I think I probably added the crabs, too.
Yes, it's curtains for you. Beef curtains. I got, you know, like it's definitely not ready for prime time, but it's a happier days when, you know, drag queens weren't worried about the brands. Instead, they were like sticking their butts inside priests' faces and farting, sucking dicks and doing drugs and kicking and shooting at each other.
There's a lot of erections in that movie too.
It's a softcore porn for sure. You know, it walks the line, and it's like it's a hard film. You can't buy it anywhere. You can buy like used DVDs on Amazon, And for a while, uh-huh. like, they were selling for like $300. It was crazy. So during the pandemic, one good thing is that there are people been uploading their copies onto Vimeo and YouTube so you can watch the whole thing.
Well, there's a few, as lovely as Candace is, there's a few too many montages.
Yes.
And the thing that I thought was interesting is that this was actually a return for Rue to her roots of making these movies in Atlanta, which were, you know, kind of, you know, trashy blaxploitation kind of, you know, you know, extremely low budget video shorts, which, you know, I mean, were some people love them. I don't really get it, but I thought that Star Booty was better. At least it had some lines.
You liked it better than AJ and the Queen.
How do you know that I don't have any of that Netflix or wherever that stuff?
Were you in some of the Star Booty stuff from the 80s?
I mean, I was in movies with Rue, yeah, that were shot in Atlanta and in New York. There was one, I think I played a dominatrix that was shot in some club. I mean, listen, most... those movies were awful. There were two or three of them that were good. I wasn't in those.
Well, I appreciate
the one that was great. Yeah. No, the one that is a must see is Comes the Blood.
Ooh,
where can anyone even see that?
I'll bet it's online, and it
comes
is
the blood,
honey. It is. So completely outrageous. Wayne Hollowell directed it, and it is about a redneck. You know Trade?
What about Trade?
Trade was the gorgeous cohort of Rue, like a big old Roman god looking
He was like a dancer or like a male model or something?
Well, it was like a, you know, yeah, I mean, he's still around. Trade was the name Rue gave him, and he was just a gorgeous guy who was in those videos. So, in Comes the Blood, Trade lives out in the country as like a redneck, you know, guy, and his daughter. No, his sister wants to have sex with him so badly, but he's told her that he won't do it until her blood comes. In other words, she reaches puberty. and I mean, it literally has to be seen to believe, to be believed. And the other great one from that crop is something that Deandra Peake and the Peake sisters, including Lady Claire from the Now Explosion, was in. I don't remember the name of it, but there was a star named Molly who could not be believed and who is just totally insane and hilarious and talented.
Well,
we'll have to ask Deandra Peake about that one.
Yay!
Yay!
You know what? Sometimes the sisters changed, so she may not have been in that one, but I think she was.
It was called Molly.
I mean, no, I don't know the name of it, but you know, there weren't that many that were starring the Peake sisters, and this one was so.
Bunny, it's so good talking to you. Best of luck with everything.
All right, honey. Thank you.
The name of the show is Contagious Voss Events. We're going to put the link in the bottom of the show notes today. So if you guys want to check it out, what day again is that going to be?
June 5th.
And I think it will stay up there like the other Voss Events things, and so you don't need to watch it on June 5th, but be my guest.
Bunny, you have a wonderful day, and take care.
You too, guys.
Okay.
Okay. Smooches.
Bye.
Bye. Lady Bunny lives in New York City.
Hunkering down.
Hunkering down, trying to avoid the Rona.
East Village, I think, is where she's at. Or French Village. Somewhere around there. And you can find out more about Lady Bunny at her website, ladybunny.net. Or you can follow her on Twitter, on Facebook. She's very active on social medias.
Yeah, you know, we have a lot of things to overcome right now. Mm-hmm. And it just reminds me of how important these artists are to dealing with these depressing, difficult challenges we face. You know, when you have a broken heart, you got to make art. And, you know, you can see how it affects Lady Bunny to be able to make art or to be creative, to engage with other people in keeping her mind busy and being able to overcome this stuff. It's when you don't have anything to do, and some people are out of work, some people are right now just listening to this podcast as a way of keeping their wits together. But definitely, you know, reach out to somebody,
get it done, make art, do your thing.
How are you keeping
support
your wits?
A podcast, and you can support the Feast of Fun the best way at feastoffun.com/plus. Your contribution to the show is what makes this show happen. We couldn't do it without you. And we will be here and continue to be here throughout this pandemic because you support the show.
And it's great to be able to do this show with you, Mark.
Oh, thank you. I know I appreciate that.
This is difficult, and I see you're my husband, and I see how this is affecting you, and my heart goes out to you, and I want to know, like, for you to share with the audience, how are you keeping your wits about you?
Well, I've been doing some stuff around the house, some home projects, getting some of those things done. But also, too, it's, you know, there's a lot of stuff that still is going on with the podcast. You know, it is like my halftime job. I don't have my other job, but I am keeping busy otherwise.
Yeah. You know? And part of it is, to me, it's like just being able to reach out to somebody, you know, and just to talk to them. And sometimes I think, like, when I call people and they're like, they don't know how to handle.
No, people aren't used to talking on the phone, or they get annoyed about talking on the phone. They just don't know how to have conversations anymore. Luckily, we engage with so many people that do know how to have conversations. And some of my best friends are friends that I've had for years. And so I'm very comfortable calling them up and talking to them on the phone.
Yeah, you get by with a little help from your friends. Mm-hmm. I want to thank everybody tuning in, listening, who supports us on Patreon, on feastoffun.com plus, or wherever they can. It really makes a big, big difference. And we want to thank you so much for listening. I'm Fausto Furnos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.